it. He was just Michael to himself. Then the director, John Singleton, would say, okay, y'all, here we go. 1, 2, 3. And it was like somebody turned on a light switch and Michael was hitting those moves. It was like, bam, bam, bam. When he passed in 2009, I had lived with Michael in my mind for so long. He was the king of my imaginary squad. I legit cried for 3 days. Junior year, I started getting my own entertainment magazines, looking for any stories on Diana and Michael. There was one about Michael recording at his home studio in Encino, California. I knew from all the Indiana coverage that the Jacksons had lived in Gary, just 2 hours north of where I was reading on my bed. Now he was living in a mansion with white shag carpeting, chandeliers, gates. Yes. Michael had made a wish and made sure it was a big one that he had to live up to. He got out, and it was like he was saying through the photo, Angie, come to California. To live the life of my dreams, I needed to be in a place that had room for big dreamers. Now, instead of just telling people I was going to be a star, I had a plan. I'm going to California, and I'm going to be famous. Angie Fox, you might go there, they say, but you're going to be right back. My Arlington High classmates were making college plans, and the question kept coming at me my senior year of high school. Teachers and people at church were all asking, Angie, where are you going to college? I was like, I'm not. I'm going to California. I'm going to make it. There were head shakes, please, tut-tuts. Finally, my mother couldn't take it. She told me I had to go to college, and that was it. So let's say I negotiated. I found a 2-year program at Golden West College in Huntington Beach, California. It would allow me to study part-time while I pursued modeling. It was the deal I had to make. By now, you know my mom. Once I convinced her to let me go to California, she was like, uh-uh, you're not going there broke. So I got my first job at Burger Chef. It was an Indianapolis-based chain, and I did the counter and the takeout. Welcome to Burger Chef. Can I take your order? This is when drive-thrus were just starting to take off, so it was actually a cool job to have in town. I also had my first boss, Lee. Lee was so cool. He wasn't one of those hovering bosses who's mean. Go on out there, girl, he say. You get those cheeseburgers ready for them. I don't know if he knew money was tight or if he was just being nice, but he would tell me I could bring food home to the family at the end of the night. So, you know, they couldn't wait for me to get off work. Yep, bring me that mushroom and Swiss burger, my big brother Sandy would say. I realized I loved working and being a provider when I came home. Every single paycheck brought me closer to California, the land of my heroes. Okay, I want you to do something for me. Think about the people who inspire you. Your fantasy mentors, like Pam and Diana for me. The folks who are living the dream you want or have the qualities you would like to present in tough situations. They could be famous, or they could be the owner of the company where you work. But they're people you'd love to meet for a coffee or margaritas, just so you could get their advice. I'll tell you the people I find myself thinking of a lot lately. Michelle Obama, Sophia Loren, Diane Carroll, and Tina Turner. I admire strong women, obviously. And I especially draw on the experiences of women whose careers expand over a long time. These women looked at what worked and what didn't work for them, and they continued to flourish. They embody my motto, don't get older, get fucking better. I thought of Michelle and Diane when I was on Celebrity Apprentice, having a boardroom confrontation with a lesser woman. I called upon the spirits of these great women, trying to embody their grace and directness. And do you know what happened? Right after it aired, I got a call from Lee Daniels, the brilliant director and creator of Empire, the biggest show on TV. He saw that Michelle and Diane and me and wanted it for his show. So thank you, Spirit Squad, for backing me up. They helped me tell that toxic trick to keep it moving and got me on one of my favorite gigs, Empire. And I got to work with one of my sister girls, Taraji P. Henson. I'm so proud of her journey. And I was touched to find out that I had once been a part of her imaginary squad in the same way that Pam Grier was for me. She said, "I watched Vivica before I even got into the business," she told Entertainment Weekly, "when Empire announced I was joining the cast. And she's always been one that I've looked up to. Like, God, I want to be able to do what she does." So to be able to work with the person who you've admired for so long, it's just mind-blowing. I'm quoting that article not to brag, okay? I let it go on. But to show you that everyone, even the incredibly gifted Taraji P. Henson, can benefit from finding a role model and saying, "I want to do what she does. Let me do the work." For practical purposes, it's important to reach out to mentors in real life. One of the people I was desperate to work with coming up was Queen Latifah. Getting to be with her on the set of Set It Off was such a learning experience. I mean, here she had this phenomenal rap career and then managed to become the star anchor of a sitcom I loved, Living Single. And then she burst out the box to be a movie star. We actually had to map our production Wednesday through Sunday to get around Latifah's schedule, but she was 100% committed. She would be asleep in her makeup chair because of it. Getting cornrows. I was like, this girl is even multitasking sleep. Watching her helped me define what was possible and smart in not being limited or typecast. Another mentor for me has been Sean P. Diddy Combs. He'll always be Puffy to me. Talk about an entrepreneur spirit. Hanging out with him, I soaked in so much knowledge about branding and diversifying. Yes, he was a rapper and producer, but that was the only way in the door. He would tell me about clothing lines, liquors, and colognes. He wasn't simply helping to sell someone else's project. He was producing the product and employing people while still staying true to his fan base. That's how you become the boss. I took their lessons to heart. I sing, I act, I dance, and I will always love entertainment. But my true brand is quality. Whether they're buying something from the Vivica Fox hair collection or selecting an item for my clothing line, I want people to be as satisfied as they are in a kick-ass performance. The biggest takeaway from Puffy as an entrepreneur is that sleep is optional. Work hard, sleep later. So invite people you like to meet to join your squad of supporters and mentors. Don't be afraid to contact people who are successful in the field that you want to excel in. Trust, they are proud of what they've achieved, and they want to share how tough it was. And the last part will give you an advantage when you face the same obstacles. Someone might advise you to get a specific license it took them years to figure out they needed, or to set up a credit card payment system for clients so they're not chasing checks later. Boom, you've learned their lesson at no cost to you. Think big, too. Go after leaders in your field. You want greats like Queen Latifah and Puffy. Don't clash yourself down and talk to the assistant's assistant out of fear that you're not worthy of someone's time. You damn sure are. Go right to the leader. Once you talk, you can ask to shadow them for a day or meet in their office for an informational interview about their work. It definitely won't happen if you don't ask. Closer to home, I want you to ask yourself, who in your circle of friends can help you on the regular? Who can support you as you reach for these goals? It can be as easy as sharing that dream with a trusted friend or someone new who can offer you a fresh perspective. Either way, you are creating a support network you can turn to. So it's not you all the time providing the momentum, okay? They can hold you accountable for small and big goals. Let's say you dream of starting your own hair salon. If you tell yourself, this week, I'll look at the spaces and maybe do some recon on places that opened in the last year or so, then maybe you'll do it. Or your other work and family responsibilities might take precedence. But tell your friend you're going to do something and you are far more likely to do your homework. You won't want to tell her, yeah, about that, I did squat. For me, that go-to person is my wonderful business partner, Lita Richardson. She's the one I turn to when I need to ask myself, okay, what are the next goals? What is possible that I'm not seeing me myself? I first met Lita at a Magic Johnson event at Paramount Studios, back when I was getting my hustle going as an actress. We were just two women at the bar, chilling by ourselves and absorbing the scene. Lita had a cute short haircut, and she's so beautiful that I assumed that she was also an actress or a model. I told her that I liked her hair, and I asked what type of work she did. I'm a lawyer, she said. You're a lawyer? I yelled, not able to hide my surprise. All the lawyers I seen were old white guys. What kind of law? Entertainment law, she replied. We would see each other at events, and for some reason, I could never remember her name. So I would say, the pretty lawyer, when I ran into her. I was starting to work a lot, and as I got more gigs, I realized it made sense for me tax-wise to get incorporated. I asked Lita to help me with that, and she later became my business partner. She always advises me and makes sure I read my contracts and know what the hell I am signing up for. We check in usually once or twice a week. I get people trying to come at me sideways. How about you invest in this? And I always run it by Lita. She'll hear an idea or look over a contract for me. Nope, you shouldn't do that, she says. Or if I really want something, she always helps me make sure my bases are always covered and I protect myself. Lita has been with me so long that she's also my reality check. Whenever I get too comfortable in a job or take a blessing for granted, she is there to say, hey, Missy, appreciate this. She can say that because she was also there to lift me up when Sure Bet shows got canceled or a movie I was dying to do sputtered in development. You need that someone to encourage your grind. Lita actually brought me the opportunity to take over a line of wigs by Beverly Johnson, the legendary fashion icon who was the first African-American model to ever appear on the cover of Vogue. I said to Lita, all the damn money I've spent on wigs and weaves, let me get some of those chips back. Besides, I had been waiting for exactly this kind of opportunity. Back in the day, I had a stylist, a nice Swiss girl named Petra, who also worked with Raquel Welch, the number one wig seller in the world. One day I was with Petra and I saw racks and racks of clothes. What the hell is all that? I asked. Oh, that is for Raquel's big wig shoot, Petra answered in her deep Swiss voice. Damn, I said, how many changes does she do? Oh, Vivica, we shoot for a couple of days and work all day, she said, then added in a conspiratorial whisper. But she makes so much money with that wig stuff. So when Lita hit me up with the Beverly Johnson opportunity, I yelled, sign me up, sign my ass up right now. But the Johnson line was in sad shape when I came on the scene. The way they were styling the wigs was boring and tired. They weren't involved. Look here. We're going to make this sexy, I said. We got to make it like Puffy does with Ciroc. We got to make it not about the wig, but about a lifestyle. We got to let girls know that to wear wigs isn't that big of a deal. I had to laugh when I quickly saw one blog, some hater, saying, now she's selling wigs. When the checks stop coming in. Honey, the joke was on them. They didn't know the hair business is $1 billion a year thing. They didn't know that, but I did. I did my homework. Remember that when people are laughing at you for your business ideas. The hair game has changed so much since I got in it, and I kind of like to take credit for it, to be very honest with you. You have great artists from Lady Gaga to Nicki Minaj that come out rocking wigs that inspire people to have fun and experiment. Then you have these young girls wanting to wear their braids down to their asses or have all their weaves in different colors. Well, guess who serviced them? Vivica did. The great part is that now everyone is trying to get into the hair game. Or just doing lifestyle brands like Gwyneth Paltrow and the lovely Jessica Alba. And I beat them to it. Thank you, Lita. So I really advise people, get your Lita. I know that might sound easy to say to someone starting out, but at the very least, there is nothing wrong with investing in yourself and getting a consultation from a lawyer, or at least getting a consultation from a business savvy friend until you can afford one. Whether you're buying a house or teaming with someone on a project. You can team with him or her to look at contracts and make sure you realize what you're signing up for. For years, women have been told to sign and smile, be grateful for the opportunity. Don't negotiate and don't ask questions. But if you do it right, you're not just walking into that office or business opportunity alone. You've got a squad backing you up and pulling for you. And I hope you'll include me. Lesson 3. Don't let anyone work harder than you. Just 1 month after high school graduation, I packed my bags for California. I was 17 years old, and I felt like my life was finally starting. Before I left Indy, I went to see Reverend McClendon to get his blessings one last time. By then, he knew my goal. I wanted to be a model, and I really thought I could make it. I thanked him again for always being so positive. "Stay out of trouble now," the Reverend told me. "I will," I said. "And Angie, don't you get involved with that crazy nightlife," he said. "California is going to be a big place. Make sure you don't get caught up with bad people." "No, sir," I said. Bright and early, Dad was there to drive me out west. He told me I was always his most adventurous child. Eyes wide open, yelling for me, he said, "Ready to take in life like a big old sponge?" We took Route 66, and at one point I fell asleep. Keep in mind, Indiana is the flattest land on God's earth. So when I woke up to see mountains, I screamed, "Dad, it's so beautiful." "Yes, baby," he said in his seen-it-all voice. "We're in Colorado." Next, we drove through Las Vegas, which might as well have been Mars. We stopped at a light, and I saw a woman with sky blue eyeshadow, leather skin, and blonde hair smoking all them cigarettes. "Dad, what's up with her?" I asked. "Oh, baby, that's them Vegas people right there," he said, like we were on a safari or something. You are looking at the genuine article. When we got to Huntington Beach, I realized why all the stars lived in California. Man, it was gorgeous and nicknamed Surf City for the perfect waves and hot surfers. It had something else I wasn't used to. I mean, I was raised around white people, but Huntington Beach was kind of like, whoa, okay, it's a bunch of white people up here. The deal was that I was going to stay with my brother's girlfriend at the time, Diana. Dad brought me to the apartment, and before he left, we both cried like babies. Diana didn't really want to play tour guide to a kid sister, a sign of things to come with her. So I explored Huntington Beach on my own. I was looking at everything. Breathing in the ocean air, this Indiana girl literally stepped off a sidewalk so she could touch her first palm tree, like the sister from another planet or some shit. I said out loud to no one but myself, "Well, that is a different type of tree right there." And that ocean, wow, it was the first time I'd ever seen the ocean. I fell in love with its strength and beauty. After I met some other students, I remember, something we always did was end the night by swimming in the ocean. Now I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? I could have been eaten by a shark. But, you know, when you're young, you just do shit. One of the things I knew I had to do was live on my own 2 feet. About a week after I got settled into California, I called my mother. "You know, Mom," I said, "I don't want you to send me money." She was quiet. Money was how she knew I was secure. "You sure, Angie?" "Yeah. I'm going to go get a job because I can do schoolwork and I can do real work," I said. "I think knowing you're sending me money will make me lazy." I knew she would understand that. Lazy was like a four-letter word for my mom. She stayed quiet. "Let me earn," I said, "because I want to go do this for myself, Mom." "If you need me, I'm always here," she said. I know now. She was proud of that, proud that she could provide, always that, but glad that she had raised a worker. But Lord, what had I done? Well, you know, Evelina Fox's daughter went and got a job right away. In fact, I got two. One was at Walden Bookstore in Huntington Beach, and the other was at famous Ramos Potato Palace. See, even then, I knew to diversify my career. The palace had a, all baked potato menu. Come on in my kitchen, and I can still make you a potato with broccoli and cheddar cheese, or chili and cheddar cheese, or meatballs and Parmesan cheese, and of course, bacon bits, sour cream, and chives. Miss Vivica will make sure that you get all the fixings. At the Potato Palace, I met this girl, Melanie. We clicked right away. And I told her that I'd been living with Diana 3 weeks and I couldn't take it. Oh, I think she had designs on being a military wife. She had this life plan with Marvin that I knew my brother had no clue about. I flat out told Melanie I couldn't stand living with Diana. Come live with my family, Melanie said. I pictured a bunk bed or some situation. Oh, that's so nice of you. We got an extra room if you don't mind paying rent. That was more like it. I didn't want charity. I needed my own space. And the rent was better than what I was paying, so it was, see ya, Diana. And yes, Marvin broke up with her right quick. I was building up my little California squad, adding two new friends, Lisa and Gigi. They were my party girls, the ones that took me to Soul Train. We would go to the Red Onions for margaritas. Melanie's family decided they were moving, and I ended up living with Gigi's family. They were Filipino and adored me. I was like a little foreign exchange student to them, their pretty little black fake daughter. My Filipino mama was a great cook, especially with fish. But, oh, God, they loved rice. They'd eat it to death, and I had eaten so much of it growing up that I had my fill for life. And I'm still in touch with these women today, and yes, I still call Gigi's mother Mom. I realize now, of course, looking back, how I was protecting myself from feeling lonesome. Recreating a family life was my way of feeling less scared of my little adventure. I had plenty to be afraid of, frankly. Breaking into modeling was tougher than I expected. I would make an appointment with an agency, and each time I would think, well, here we go. I had my little pictures all ready to show them. I'd walk in, and the rejection was pretty quick, though they thought they were being kind. We already got a black girl, they say. She looks just like you. Then in sort of a throwaway gesture, they'd add, you got a great look. I'd nod, thank them for their time, and see myself out. That was before the days of us coming in different shades and colors. They had their look, and they were happy with their quota. One. I needed some excitement to make up for selling books and potatoes while facing constant rejection. So I started venturing out to Los Angeles, hanging out with more girls. I was discovering who I was, and that nightlife was calling me. Exactly like Reverend McClendon had warned me. Ooh, I'd go out to L.A. with my new friends and partay. It was amazing meeting all these new people, going out Saturday and not hearing Mama yelling on Sunday morning, time for church, Angie. I had a good run partying and living for weekends. Before I knew it, I was doing less and less work for my Golden West degree and picking up more hours to fund the clubbing. Don't get me wrong. And cue up the 80s less than zero soundtrack. I never got messy or anything like that. What I was guilty of was wasting time. There was a moment where I had to do what I call flipping the channel. I was out late one night at another club in L.A., and I kind of looked around at who I was hanging with. These weren't my homegirls or Gigi. They were people who liked to drink and be seen. And this one guy was eyeing me for a while. Then he got real close. You look like a model, he said. He was cute, but ugh, that gin and tonic breath, please. It was an aha moment. Like, a model? I wasn't one. I was thinking it was cute to have guys buy me drinks, thinking it mattered whether or not I was the prettiest girl in the place. That was acting like a model. Not being one. I gave the guy a polite smile and looked at all the people around me. These people weren't hustlers. They were not focused on anything other than getting a waitress's attention. I'm around people who are going nowhere. And I'm better than this, I thought. All this clubbing ain't equal to no paychecks. I need to switch things up here. I had to buckle down and get it together. I entered a few modeling competitions. One was called Face Finders, and I got to go to Arizona and was a finalist. All the girls were talking about wanting to go to New York. That's where the best models go, one said. A girlfriend of mine, Barb, wanted to get into the music business, and she kept bringing up New York, too. So one day I turned to her, let's try it out, I said. Let's move to New York. Cut to us living in Hell's Kitchen. Our apartment was a dingy little hellhole near Times Square, back when Times Square was rough and dirty. Barb and I slept on two air mattresses on the floor. No matter how I scrubbed the place, it never felt like home. It was a romantic, starving artist scene, only there was nothing romantic or in the least bit nice about it. I called my mom as soon as I got a phone. Mom, I've moved to hell. Well, she said, you wanted to go there. A friend from L.A. by the name of Jill Jones was also living in New York. She was the blonde in Prince's 1999 video, working the keyboard and grinding with Lisa from Wendy and Lisa. Prince loved her voice, and, you know, they had a little thing going on. I thought it would be good for Barb to meet her, so I invited Jill over to our place. What the hell are you doing over here? She said, standing in the doorway. Vivica, I'm rescuing you. She did. Prince had put her up in a penthouse across town by Grand Central. Since she was always traveling with Prince, she said I could live with her for free. Just take care of my dog, she said. I've got you. Me and them two dogs were some pampered bitches. She had these two little Malteses, and we had a fine time acting like that penthouse was our place. It was like I had moved from the projects to Beverly Hills. The place had white carpets and light walls, and I would take the most luxurious bubble baths in this huge tub. Even the water felt rich. I would come home for modeling look-sees and look out over the beautiful lights of the city. If I kidded myself enough, I could feel like I'd made it. But none of this was really mine. I was playing pretend, not different from Barbie in a dream house. I wasn't jealous, though. I felt, one day, I will earn this and have this, too. I lived like a princess for nearly a year, not paying rent, my career treading water in that pretty bathtub. Then one day, Jill gave me a call. Hey, girl, me and him aren't going through good things right now, she said. With Prince? It was always him. She didn't need to clarify. Oh, I'm sorry, baby, I said. I'm going to have to move, Vivica. It was like the record scratched. If Jill moved, I moved. Prince was paying for my little fantasy, and I'd never even met him. And when the relationship was over, it was like someone called the repo man on Jill. Girl, bye. I made the mistake of becoming comfortable in someone else's success. I had to pull up stakes, but I was not going to Indianapolis, that's for sure. I decided to go back to Huntington Beach and Gigi's family so I could finish up school, which I did. Thank you very much, Mom. I got my associate's degree in social and behavioral sciences. I took a cab to the airport, and my whole life could be crammed into two bags. I looked back at the skyline of Manhattan, and I thought, when I come back, I'm gonna be famous. And I was. The next time I came to New York, I was a bona fide soap opera star. And yes, I finally met Prince in 2011. He invited me on stage to dance for him at his show at the Forum. He was a little bitty thing, but boy, he had some moves. I was too busy dancing to thank him for all those bubble baths. His passing was a terrible shock, and I will always be indebted to him for giving me that first taste of real luxury. Once I was back in California, there was no more time to mess around. I needed to be ready, to stay attentive for opportunity and ready to act immediately. No warm-up, no let me think about it. I carried my modeling portfolio with me everywhere. expecting to be discovered and visualizing how I would react so I would be able to take the moment and make it count. And I truly believe that because I put my intention out there, fate responded with an, "I see you, girl." It happened when I was having lunch with a girlfriend outside at Cravings, an Italian restaurant on Sunset Boulevard. I was wearing this leopard print miniskirt with cowboy boots and a black shirt, and I had my hair up. This man came walking along the street and then stopped at our table to look right at me. "Excuse me, are you an actress?" he asked with a British accent. "No," I said, "but I'm a model." I went digging into my bag. "Would you like to see my portfolio?" "No, but here's my number," he said. "My name is Trevor Walton. Please call me. I think you would be great for a television show I'm doing." His card said he was a producer at Paramount. But the second he was gone, my girlfriend, who was not in the entertainment business, was all like, "Okay, these guys out here are devils, trying to get girls and turn them into prostitutes. If I called this Trevor," she said, "I was basically signing my life away to the Hillside Strangler." I listened to my instincts instead. This was the moment I had stayed ready for. And I later came to find out Trevor was as gay as could be and didn't want nothing from me but my talent. There was something in me that he saw, and he became my guardian angel. He got me an agent and an audition for a pilot at Paramount. When I went in, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I smiled, pushed aside my fear, and did it anyway. There is nothing as inspiring to an artist or entrepreneur as having nothing to lose. Trevor called me after the audition. They said, "You were green," he told me. "Green as hell. But they all knew this was your first time, and they liked you." I didn't get the job, but Trevor guaranteed me I'd be working. I landed a Clearasil commercial where I had to run around on Melrose, pretending I was getting chased by pimples. I didn't have any lines. There was someone yelling, "Don't let the zits get you!" But hey, it was $400, scale. And you have to start somewhere. Okay, let me tell you how auditions go. It's rare that they ask you to sit down and talk about yourself. You might get that little tiny bit of sugar when you come in, like, "Hello, what's your name?" Usually it's, "You got any questions? Okay, let's go." Sometimes you can feel the room and you think, "Oh, yeah." You know they're with you. Then they may give you some notes and ask you to try it a different way. That's to see if you're coachable. Just to see if you can give them a little something else. But most of the time, it's thank you. You see yourself out and you wait by the phone. You have to be sympathetic to the casting agent, who is kind of like a hiring manager or someone you see in HR. Maybe you think you're perfect for the job, but they have the whole film or company in mind. You have to be the right fit, so if you're hungry, your best bet is to go into the audition or interview and be flexible so they know you're coachable. I kept working my day jobs while I auditioned, but I started working smarter thanks to my host sister, Gigi. "Girl, you need to stop working these little jobs." "What do you mean?" I asked. "I like the bookstore, and you know I love the Potato Palace." "You need to come work with me at Bob's Big Boy and be a real waitress." "What's the difference?" "You go home every day with money," she said. "What? Oh, yes, sweetie," she said with a laugh. "These tips flow in over there." And so that's what got me from behind the counter and introduced me to the world of waitressing. I loved it. I felt like I was getting a grade at the end of the meal. The cash in hand was good. "Thank you, Gigi." But I kept at my auditions until I saw a notice that Days of Our Lives was casting. I went in with all those auditions under my belt, and I wasn't so green anymore. I'm no Michael Jordan, but he once said of a Nike commercial, "Why don't they show all the times I failed to get success?" Did you know he was cut from a high school basketball team? Stick that on your inspirational board. I had plenty of failures, so I was definitely ready for success. Days would be my first speaking role, and I wasn't going to have to pretend pimples were out to get me. I was a nervous wreck the night before my first day on Days of Our Lives. I had my lines down cold, make no mistake, but I was worried about the 5 a.m. call time. I was still living in Huntington Beach, and I had to get to the NBC studio in Burbank. You can never guess how L.A. traffic will be. My friend Lisa Mapps had a place in L.A., and she was like, Vivica, just sleep on my couch. So my major TV debut followed a night of couch surfing. Everybody on set was really sweet, and I had to admit, I was a little starstruck. These were people I'd seen on TV for years, and there they were, speed-reading scripts and checking their makeup. I have, to this day, the utmost respect for soap actors. Working on one is like acting boot camp since the schedule is so grueling. If your character has a story going, you do like 5 shows a week. Then go home to memorize pages and pages of dialogue. And you have to make the most outlandish storylines real, all while hitting your mark and crying on cue. One of the first things I learned was that nobody had time to wait for you to get teary for a crying scene. When I first had trouble, the crew was like, oh, baby, we got a little trick for you. They blew menthol mist into my eyes, and that would make you tear up. That is why I said, I gotta learn to cry on cue, because this shit stings like a mother. I also learned about craft services. That's one thing about show business. You will get fed, because they got food, like, everywhere. That's why you see actors and actresses get a little chunky when they finally get a job. You can't blame a once-starving actor for not being able to push away from the table, you know? Sometimes it's steak and lobster, other times, and this is a pet peeve of mine, wraps or some garbage. It all depends on how big the production is and how much the people in charge like to eat, too. At the soaps, there was always breakfast because it's a 12-hour day. On days, you could go to the NBC commissary for lunch, and that was always fun. You would see stars from other shows, and it added to the community feel. We were all working actors, living our dreams. I'd been in audition mode for so long that I stayed that way. Every day, I tried to earn my part on the show. I knew my lines. I knew my scene's partner's lines. I showed up early. I stayed late. I wanted to be there even more. But the writers just weren't building up my story. China Beach called. And I landed a little arc on there as part of a makeshift girl group in Vietnam, the Candettes. But the thing that seemed like it could be a start of something even bigger was a small, and I mean small, role on Oliver Stone's docudrama, Born on the 4th of July. My character's name was Hooker, VA Hospital. So that gives you a sense of my scene with Tom Cruise. As you know, Tom plays Ron Kovic, a paralyzed Vietnam War veteran, and I straddled another war veteran in his hospital bed next to Tom Cruise's character. My lines were, why sure, sugar, like this? Mm-hmm. Anything you want, baby. I was a nice prostitute, thank you very much. I was on set just one day, and it was overwhelming. I just wanted to not get fired, so I was just standing there and trying not to get in the way. I admit, I was looking to see Tom Cruise, you know, Tom Cruise from Top Gun and Cocktail. As I'm looking, this crew guy walked by me looking like a rough biker who needed a shave and a shower. He stopped right in front of me. Hi there, he said, holding out his hand. Hi, I said, shaking it kind of warily, but so nervous about being on a film set that I would take anyone as a friend. I found myself looking into the most intense and most beautiful green eyes I'd ever seen in my life. What's your name? He asked. I paused, drawn into those eyes. My name is Vivica, I said. Do we have a fixer-upper on our hands here? I thought, I can get him a razor. Tom, he said. Nice to meet you. As he was walking away, I realized that was Tom Cruise. Oh, my God, I said aloud. Was that Tom Cruise? He heard me and turned back with that smile. Yeah, he said. I look kind of jacked up, huh? Oh, man. So that was my first meeting with Tom Cruise. He was the most polite guy, and he was committed to work. He knew everyone's name on that crew, and I thought, that's how a star acts. You can be humble and still be confident. The biggest star in the world came right up to me and introduced himself to someone with 3.5 lines and half day's work. To this day, I do that on every single set I'm on. Meanwhile, Days still wasn't really putting much into my character. I was holding down my waitressing gigs, too. I didn't want to turn down good work like China Beach or opportunities to do small film roles if Days was going to cut me at any moment. So I asked for a contract. They said they couldn't at the time, and I made a decision. Oh, well, gotta go then. If you feel you're not valued at work or not selling like you think you should, get real and think about why. Is it because you're not applying yourself? For me, working hard means going above and beyond, not simply doing what's in the job description. If you're in an office or company, you've got to be a team player. That means coming in early, doing something extra, doing those little bitty things. When you go out to get coffee, bring something for the boss. I'm not saying be a kiss-ass or a brown-noser. Just prove you're a team player. Make it so that no one can say, well, are you qualified? You aren't here, you haven't applied yourself, and you haven't done the extra thing. If you've done all those things and you're still not moving up, then you can walk away knowing your worth. If you're not valued, move on. That's what I did with Days. I heard about an opportunity to join Generations, the first soap opera centering on an African-American family with the promise of a much bigger role than I had on Days. I went for it, and I got the gig. My Generations character, Maya Rubens, was a dance girl, and it was fun to play her. The best day was when I found out Richard Roundtree was playing my dad. Shaft is my dad? Lord, what? Richard Roundtree starred as a detective in the Shaft series, a collection of films that had defined representations of black male power in movies for years. He's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. The story was that Maya has been helping her father stay on the run for 15 years after a mysterious lab explosion. I brought layers to my work. I was the co-star that people would be like, shit, you don't want to do nothing with Vivica because she will come in and steal that damn scene. I was still new as an actress. I had my first love scene ever on Generations. It was with Christoph St. John, who was the male lead of the show. And I damn near ran out of the bed. I was like, oh, Lord Jesus, what the hell is this? Oh, my God, we are not making out. He was such a pro, but I was still a little bit of Angie from Indianapolis. Evelina's going to kill me behind this one, I thought. But I got through it. When I first started acting, my impulse was always, oh, my God, what's my mother going to say? But again, you have to be ready to face your fears and do it anyway. Having courage doesn't mean you don't still get anxious. To this day, I get butterflies on a new set or stepping onto a stage. Not every now and again. I am talking every single time. Maybe you get anxious when you're giving a presentation or meeting a new boss or a client. Butterflies just mean the work is still important to you. And that's good. Here's a tip for taming those nerves. When I get too in my head before a performance, I've learned to ask God for help. I say, give me grace, Lord, so that I can perform to the best of my God-given abilities. You have brought me to this point, and I am grateful. And it works. Your whole life has brought you to that moment. Everything you've learned, all the hours you've put in, all that was training for the now. Remember that, and you've got this. Day to day on Generations, my on-screen dad, Richard, gave me such a sense of protection. One day, we were working with a certain director. I won't bother you with his name, because he wasn't a nice man, and he's beneath your notice. At the time, I didn't know how little he thought of actors. One day, I asked the director a question. It wasn't a cliched, what's my motivation question. I think it was about blocking or what beat I should enter the room on. Your job is to shut up and do what I told you to do, he spat. I blinked. My instinct was to fight. My other instinct was to keep my damn job. Like John Shaft incarnate, Mr. Richard Roundtree came to my rescue. Your fucking job is to direct her, he yelled. You just don't tell her to shut up. She asked you a question. Answer her. I turned to him quickly, fast enough to mouth, I love you. Since then, he's played my dad in other projects, on an episode of Beverly Hills 90210, and in the stage play Whatever She Wants. I always refer to him as Mr. Richard Roundtree, because I love him so much. He taught me a lesson that I bring to every set. Be ready to stand up for others. I always try to be welcoming to other actors that I work with. I am never the standoff star to the up-and-comers. It's about grace. But it's also about being smart and anticipating reversals of fortune. Watch how you talk to people, because someday they might be in the position to hire or fire you. I had a bigger problem than the director, and that problem's name was Janelle Allen. When the show first started, Janelle was the star, and she did not appreciate this new kid coming in and getting attention. I think she was kind of the set bully, and folks watched their step around her. I remember her being quite the bitch. She saw the direction the show was going with my character, and she felt I was getting a little bit too big for my britches. It blew up in hair and makeup, of course, where the real drama happens on soaps. We were each getting done up when the show publicist came in to pitch me an idea. Janelle snapped, "Ugh, are you guys doing another stupid magazine shoot?" Nobody said anything, which was how I'd seen everyone react to Janelle's outburst. Not this time. "Why, 'cause you're not in it?" I asked again. And everybody in the room was like, "Oh, shit! Ooh, ooh, ooh." They knew it was about to go down. If there were a microwave in there, they would have been saying, "Hold up, let's make some popcorn, 'cause this show is about to be popping." Janelle froze. "Little girl," she said. "Oh, I got you, little girl." She made a face, and I went in deeper. "Bitch, you picked the wrong one today." I was ready to go 12 rounds. But Janelle backed down. Bullies come at you from a place of fear. The thing with bullies in any workplace is they don't really know how to fight, and they get lazy coasting on their reputation. I'm not telling you to call Jeannie, the middle manager, a bitch, but stand up for yourself. Janelle was pissing on her territory because she feared losing it. If she could intimidate me into submission, she would. I offered her the opportunity to be equals, nothing less. She grew to respect me, probably because I stood up to her, and we became friends on the set. Thank God, because one day our characters Maya and Doreen had to throw down in a catfight that has become legendary. Picture young me as Maya in a skin-tight red glamour gown, showing up at Doreen's ivory-hued apartment to confront her about trying to get with my dad. Janelle had a shiny yellow Alexis Carrington dress with a train. Oh, it was the makeup room all over again, only this time we had ball gowns and the campiest lines imaginable. "What do you want?" Janelle in character hissed at me. "I want to wipe this floor with you," I said. Well, Janelle proceeds to throw off her fur, toss her bag, kick off her heels one by one, and lasso that train between her legs to get in a sort of sumo princess squat position. It was all I could do not to laugh. I kicked off my shoes too, moved aside an armchair, and we took off our dangly earrings like ladylike prize fighters. The script had her getting the upper hand at first, but my Maya gave her all. I ripped off that train. Oh, and all hell broke loose. We trashed that set. No vase was safe from us. The scene became legendary, and people are still talking about it. After a certain vicious catfight on Empire, the next day many sites called it an homage to my generation's battle. Then all my friends started emailing me a YouTube video. The subject line was generally, "OMG!" Two men had painstakingly recreated the catfight, shot for shot, delivering every line and every blow to perfection. I was so touched, and I laughed and laughed. Now you know I value, respect, and cherish my gay fans, but I have never loved them more. Around this generation's time, I had a dear friend come out to me. Well, I made him come out to me. He spent a lot of time talking about women around me, and I could tell that he was just trying to prove something to me that was false. And I didn't want that for him. Okay, sit your ass down, I said. I need you to stop trying to act like you like girls. You're gay, aren't you? I am, he said. His whole body exhaled. He hadn't told anybody. Can you imagine not telling a single soul who you are? He grew up in the Bible Belt and thought he had no choice. Are you going to think I'm a bad person? Absolutely not, I said, crying that he even thought that. I have no right to tell you who to love. You know what I have a right to tell you? To be happy, because I love you, and I want you to only do stuff that's going to make you happy. Everyone needs to be told they're great and deserving of love. God knows I do. As I was writing this book, something I said in a radio interview about Vivica's black magic was seen as homophobic. I was asked if my guys dance for men. I said no, that this was the ultimate girls' night out. I was thinking of my girls and was so overly defensive of my guys, who have been called gay on social media by insecure people jealous of the attention the dancers get. I phrased it badly, and it turned into a headline. I didn't get much sleep for a few nights because I was trying so hard to apologize. If you need to hear it again, let me tell you now. I love you. Once I started making a little money, I had one big wish. Mom, I really want you to come out here, I said. It had become a constant plea on our weekly calls. I wanted Evelina Fox to see the mountains with her own eyes. I knew I couldn't get her to dip a toe in the ocean, but at least I wanted her to see its beauty. Finally, she relented and came to visit me. I picked her up at the airport and gave her the biggest hug. There was so much I wanted her to see. You wait here, I said. I'll bring the car. When I drove up in my ride, she about got back on that plane. What kind of car are you driving? She said. It was a burgundy Jeep with chrome wheels, my absolute pride and joy. God, I love that car. The Jeep sat up a little high, and Mom kept alternating, holding her seat and the door as we drove. I want to show you something before we go to my place, I said. I had it all planned out. I drove her up Beechwood Canyon in the Hollywood Hills, just to where you could see the Hollywood sign. It's a windy, twisty road up, and as we got higher, she kept asking how much further it was. Just a little ways, I said, heading up the canyon. I kept thinking how fabulous she would think this was. Well, she had never been so high up before and started to become terrified. Angie, you turn this damn car around right now! That only made adventurous Angie try to get there faster, which, well, only made her yell louder. When we finally stopped, she turned and hissed at me. Girl, if you don't take my ass down from up here right quick. I did. She didn't like the race down the mountain either. I should have checked with her. But she liked my place and that it was clean. I took her out to eat at some of my favorite places. There was one moment when we were just starting lunch, when we held hands across the table to say grace. As she spoke, I peeked up to see the California light falling on my Indiana mom, a palm tree swaying behind her. She looked beautiful. We made it to Hollywood, I thought. After we said our amens, I asked her something. Are you proud of me, Mom? I asked. I'm working. I like your being responsible and keeping your home neat, Angie, she said. You're always neat. I understand now that was the highest praise she was able to give me at the time. But back then, I just wanted her to tell me that she was proud. Generations was great for me. But as my storyline built up, I was only working 3 days a week. That left plenty of time for me to keep my waitressing job. Yes, I kept my day job. I started working at L.A. Pasta and Pizza in the Beverly Center, L.A.'s fancy mall. I was sort of half in, half out as a working actress. One day, in the middle of a shift at L.A. Pasta and Pizza, I brought the check to a nice couple sitting at a two-top. Can I ask you a question? The woman asked me. Of course. She paused. Are you on a soap opera? Yes, I said, still in my accommodating waitress voice, like I was saying we have a booth ready. Generations. You play Maya, right? I couldn't hold it back. Yeah, I said. I was so touched to be recognized. I thought that was you, she said. I love you. I love you back, I said, and I did. That was the defining moment. I was like, okay, if you're going to do this acting thing, you've got to commit. Yes, keep your day job, but be ready to commit to your 24/7 dream job. As soon as Generations upped me to 4 and 5 days a week, I quit LA Pasta and Pizza. Then, wouldn't you know, Generations got canceled. But I didn't regret my decision, mainly because I had $25,000 in the bank and I thought I was rich. Yes, honey. I was sitting like a fat cat on that pile of F.U. money. But that money started saying, see you right quick. I was burning through it, auditioning again and wondering if I made a mistake leaving waitressing. I turned to a friend for advice. See, the squad comes in handy. While doing Generations, I met a wonderful actress by the name of Sheila Wills. She'd done a lot of work in soaps, and she became a real mentor to me. In fact, she was my acting coach for a while and still is in my life to this day. I told her how frustrated I was getting. Vivica, stay ready, she told me. For an actress, she told me, working or not, I had to take care of myself, stay in shape, and keep my skills sharp. When it's your turn, Sheila said, if you're not ready and you miss out on that job that could change your life, the only person you have to blame is yourself. Your turn will be coming. Stay ready. I treated auditions like learning experiences, meeting people and experimenting with different types of dialogue. I did stand-in work to get a sense of different sets. I didn't let anything slide. Then I got The Young and the Restless, playing sweet Dr. Stephanie Simmons. Seemed like a winning prize. And honey, I got to kiss Shamar Moore, who back then and still is all that and a bag of chips with a helping of hot sauce. Mm. So why wasn't I happy? I wanted more. I didn't know it at the time, but The Young and the Restless turned out to be my golden ticket to becoming a movie star. Lesson 4. Knock on success's door, honey. Hell, kick it in. I have learned that real empowerment for men and women is taking charge of your life and becoming your own boss. And in building careers, some people say good things happen to those who wait. Not me. I believe good things come to those who go out and make it happen. Success won't come knocking on your door. Knock on success's door, honey. Hell, kick it in. That's what I did on a morning in 1994 when I marched into my agent's office with one goal. All the black girls in Hollywood were talking about it. Everyone was going out to get Independence Day. There was a role for a kick-ass black woman in this film, Jasmine DeBrow. A love interest for Will Smith, who I like so much from when I did an episode of Fresh Prince. How come I'm not getting an audition for Independence Day, I asked. Aw, baby, you're on a soap opera, she said. You know you ain't got a big enough name for that. That's a big old movie. I nodded, but I didn't accept it. She was telling me to know my place. Go on back there and learn your lines. I liked working on The Young and the Restless. Being allowed to come into people's homes and entertain people who wanted a little escape. But I had a little voice telling me I needed to go take my career to the next level. It turned out the wife of Independence Day producer Bill Fay was one of those fans watching me at home. Jodie Fay was laid up at home pregnant, watching me play Dr. Simmons on The Young and the Restless. She called her husband. Are you still having trouble casting Jasmine? She asked him. He told her that no one was sticking, and she said, you should really try this girl. My agent called me that day, sounding pretty amused. The Independence Day casting folks called, she said, looking for you. I thought she was teasing me. They called looking for me, I said? You're kidding. Nope, she said. Now go on out there and go get it. It was one of those moments where you realize your life is about to get a turbocharge. I distinctly remember hanging up the phone and saying aloud, "Here it comes." Now, Jasmine is a stripper in the film.